Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani and I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm very happy to be here with you all today. I have a great show planned for you. Clara Lyle will be my guest today. She is the main photographer and social media person and crew member of Outstanding in the Field, which is a great organization that I will tell you more about in a little while. And I want to share lots of great events going on with you that are going on in and around the city and actually the country. I have some events that I want to share with you from Albany all the way down to North Carolina. So stay tuned. Why don't we start with my event that's coming up? Every year, this will be my 21st year, I organize a really huge Thanksgiving feast for everyone's not homeless, but they're all in need, people who live in and around Jamaica, Queens. And we do this at Rufus King Park, and we partner with the River Fund New York Food Pantry. And it is a community event that has gotten bigger and bigger, and I'm always getting new people that want to volunteer, and I have a good problem. Sometimes there's too many people. But I have over 100 people coming through the IE Green Homestead over the weekend cooking for this event. And we get donated turkeys from a whole bunch of sources. You know, some people actually donate turkeys that they cook already. Some people donate turkeys that they get for spending a certain amount of money at a grocery store. But anyway, I gather turkeys, usually around 60 or so, and we cook them up, along with hundreds and hundreds of pounds of regular potatoes and sweet potatoes that we wash in the bathtubs, and we have kids on their knees scrubbing away, and cases of green beans, and it's just a huge event that takes place all weekend long, and there is a sign up if you would like to participate on my website at ieatgreen.com so that you can participate. And it's a wonderful thing to actually do with your children, too. I have lots of parents that come with their young kids who love the idea of participating. And then we serve this out in Rufus King Park on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. You know, I have Manhattan Mini Storage that donates me a truck for schlepping everything, and I have Penske Truck Rentals giving me a refrigerated truck, and I have a produce company that donates a lot of produce, and then I also go to Whole Foods and to my local John's Market and lots of little shops, Kitchen Cabaret, you know, and they all donate a case of this or a case of that. And like I said, I've been doing this for 21 years. I have one restaurant that's been donating the case of butter to me for almost the whole 21 years. So it's really great, and the energy is really high. And so if you want to participate, please sign up for that. Tonight, there's two great events going on. One is at Sip Tea Lounge in Huntington. It's called Pecha Kucha, and it's a presentation of 20 slides that are shown for 20 seconds each. And it's almost like an open mic. I mean, you can sign up to show your slides, and people come with their 20 slides, and you know, they run through them relatively quickly, but it's a social gathering, and, you know, Sip Tea Lounge is not large, so it can't be too many people, but it's really a wonderful idea. So if you can make it, that should be fun. Also, tonight, Michael Pollan is going to be in conversation at the theater at Westbury. He is the author of The Omnivore's Dilemma and In Defense of Food, and he's just going to be talking. And this is sponsored by the Book Review in Huntington and Edible Long Island. Tickets are $39.50 and $49.50, and is at the theater at Westbury. So check that out. Tomorrow, October 30th, there's a free screening of a documentary film called Bag It, which is a great film. I saw that last year or a couple years ago, just about all the waste of plastic bags. Really good film, and this is being organized by United for Action. It's free. It's at the Rutgers Presbyterian Church in Manhattan. So you can go to United for Action. Their website would have it, or all of these events are listed on my website at ieatgreen.com. October 31st is a harvest dinner at Shin Estate Vineyards out in Matatuck. I actually think I got an email that they're sold out. I'm not sure, though, so double check. If you're out there anyway, Shin Estate is a great, great vineyard, all biodynamic, really wonderful, so check that out. November 1st is the Fall Market Dinner at the Bell at Anchor, sponsored by Slow Food East End. Also, November 1st through 8th is the Long Island Restaurant Week, so lots of restaurants are offering specials, so you can take part of that. Monday, November 2nd, this is really important. This is the Port Ambrose public hearing. Port Ambrose is a liquefied natural gas port that they're proposing to build off the coast of Long Beach, right near New York City and New Jersey. This would, you know, threaten public safety, endanger our beaches, and most importantly, it would maintain our reliance on fossil fuels, and it would be blocking a wind energy project that they've also proposed for the same location. So it's really important for us all to show our support against building this liquefied natural gas port. It really, you know, people think, oh, well, we need this natural gas for ourselves. Well, you should know this is all for export. This is not any energy that we're going to be using here domestically. This is all for profit, and yet it can also be a target for terrorist attacks. It is, you know, there's accidents that happen at these plants all the time, and it's so close to the city and to Long Island, it's really such a bad idea. So please come down and show your support for that. That's at the Long Beach Hotel on Monday, this coming Monday, from 6 to 10 p.m. Also, November 4th are harvesting opportunities up in the New York Conference. This is up in Albany, and it's a large conference organized by the American Farmland Trust. It's for people who care about New York agriculture and want to work together and network, growing our local food economies and protecting farmland. Great event, $95 to participate, but check that out. And November 4th is a free panel discussion up at Columbia Law School about who is responsible for climate change. This should be really great. I mean, we are hearing more and more people talking about who to blame for climate change. Of course, there's some people that are non-believers and don't even believe we have anything to do with it. But most people at this point agree that our activity has to do with climate change and how to deal with it, you know, how to, get schools to divest, whether that's really going to help. Anyway, it should be a great panel discussion organized by the Union of Concerned Scientists and Columbia University. Like I said, it's free from 7 to 9 on November 4th. Also, during the day on November 4th, Sustainable Studies Program at Stony Brook University is having a panel discussion and presentation on faith and climate change. And that should be a really great event as well. So, again, you can find out more information on all of these things by going to my website. What else? So on November 8th is the Naval Expo on Long Island. That's always a big, big event with lots of vendors and people talking about health and well-being and fitness and beauty, et cetera. They're always a great event, so check that out. November 10th, United for Action is presenting Zero Waste, which is a panel of speakers to discuss how we can get New York City to a zero-waste place really soon, because we all need to figure out how we can do that. And that is free with a suggested $5 donation. That is at the West Park Presbyterian Church. And there is lots more events, and I'm not going to take the time to go over all of them, but please check out my website and take advantage of them. Some of them need, you know, advance notice. Like I said, there's the one in North Carolina, which is in November 14th. That's a farm-to-school conference. Should be really great. And, you know, especially if you're in the Asheville area or you want to make a trip out of it. Just Food is having a great event on November 15th called Eat Up, Evaluating Kids' Nutrition at Temple Israel, and that's November 15th. But anyway, check out my website for all of these great events. And I hope to see you at some of them. I'll certainly be at the Monday Port Ambrose public hearing, because that is right in my backyard, and I am very passionate about keeping that from being built. On my website, there's also lots of petitions you can sign. Petitions is a really easy way to be involved. If you want to go the next step and write a letter, make a phone call, all the better, but at least sign these petitions and let our policymakers know that we care about the things that we do care about. Because if we don't band together and speak up against these things, then the corporations that have the money will just rule in everything. So there's a petition you can sign to reject the Keystone Pipeline. I can't believe we're still talking about this. You know, I was down in Washington, D.C. years ago with Bill McKibben, got arrested, you know, protesting this pipeline. I can't believe they're still talking about it. This is what happens in Congress, I guess, you know. One step forward, two steps back, and we keep talking about the same things. Same thing with GMO labeling. There's a petition for that. We really need to get GMOs labeled right now. Monsanto, as you know, is trying to push through this DARC Act, which would make it illegal for states to develop their own laws creating or mandating labeling. And we don't want that to happen. So please sign that petition. And also there's a petition to let Governor Cuomo know that we want a clean clean climate change plan here in New York. So please sign that as well. And what else? Oh, did you see the new report about cancers being linked to processed or red meat? Nothing new that many of us that have been reading about this stuff for a long time didn't know about, but it's really coming out really big by the World Health Organization, a new report on how meat and processed meat really is horrible for your body and has increased increased cancer in the colon, prostate, and pancreas. So I thought that was a really interesting study I wanted to share with you. Also, how the soda industry is fighting the law in Mexico about the soda tax, because they actually, it's cut down on soda intake a lot, and it's also, you know, they're seeing the results of it in a positive way. And of course, the soda companies don't like that. So read about that. And there was also a study revealing that cheese is as addictive as drugs. Oh, my God. Well, casein, which is in cheese, they say releases an opiate that plays with your dopamine receptors and can trigger addictive behavior. So for those of us that crave cheese, now you know why. Okay, so now I would like to share with you my recipe so that I can introduce Clara to all of you. My recipe this week is a roasted pumpkin soup. I harvested so many pumpkins from my garden this year, and I was doing a slow food in school program on Tuesday at a Work of Heart school in Huntington. And so I thought roasted pumpkin soup would be a perfect treat to bring to the children, talk to them about how pumpkins grow. So this recipe actually makes about 44 cups, so you can certainly cut it in half, or you can freeze it. And freezing soup is really a wonderful thing in the winter to be able to just pull out a quart of soup. So, you know, I only use two pumpkins to make this, but if you want to cut it in half, that's easy. But anyway, two pumpkins. You cut the pumpkins in half, remove the seeds. If you want to roast the seeds, that's a fun thing to do as well. But anyway, for this purpose, you're just going to scoop out the insides, remove the seeds, and leave it like that. 1 tablespoon minced garlic, 3 tablespoons of fresh minced ginger, 5 teaspoons salt, 2 onions chopped, 2 teaspoons black pepper, 2 teaspoons cinnamon, 1 teaspoon turmeric, 1/2 teaspoon nutmeg, 4 carrots chopped, 5 potatoes cut into chunks, 2 cans of coconut milk, 2/3 cup of maple syrup, 16 cups of water, 3 teaspoons of dried ground ginger, and then parsley for garnish. So you're going to lay out the pumpkin, cut side down on an oiled roasting pan, and you're going to bake that at 375 for about an hour until they're soft. And so depending on the size of the pumpkins, you just pierce it with a fork, poke it with a fork, and if it can go through the skin, then you know it's soft. Meanwhile, in a large stock pot, saute the onions, carrots, ginger, and garlic in a little olive oil, and saute that for a while. Add the spices and lightly toast them for about 2 more minutes. When the pumpkin is ready, you're going to scrape out the pulp, leaving behind the skin, and add the pulp to the stock pot. Then add the 16 cups of water. And I actually, in my teapot, I boil the water, so I'm adding 16 cups of boiling water. It just has the soup going a little faster. So you add 16 cups of water to cover the pumpkin by about 3 inches and bring that to a boil. Add the potatoes to the pot and let it simmer for 30 to 40 minutes until everything's soft. Remove from the heat and with an immersion blender, you can puree the soup right in the stock pot. Return it to the stove, add the coconut milk and the maple syrup, and that's it. Stir it around, taste it. I always, you know, depending on the pumpkins, depending on everything, how it comes together, sometimes you might want to add a little bit more ginger. That's why in my original recipe, you know, I didn't have ground ginger, but when I tasted mine, I needed some more ginger, and that's why I added the 3 teaspoons of dry ground ginger. So every pot of soup is going to be a little different. You adjust it for salt and pepper according to your taste, and then I garnish it with parsley. And the kids, you know, a lot of the kids loved it, and some of the kids wouldn't even try it, but that's the way kids are. You know, and every year I go back, actually 4 times a year I go back, but I'm usually bringing something different. But, you know, the kids will try things. And one thing that I always talk to kids about is how their bodies are growing. Well, so is their tongue, and their tongue is constantly changing. And so I get them excited at the thought that what they might not like today, they might like next month when they grow bigger, because their tongue is going to change. And so that's why they have to keep tasting things, because it's a sign of growing up. And that gets them excited to taste things. So try that psychology on your child and let me know if it works. Okay, so now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Clara Lyle. She is a native of New York City, and she spent her time biking around the city and checking out the culinary offerings in this city. She's the daughter of a chef, and she's always been interested in food policy and practices. And so after she graduated from Cornell University, she took off to explore some of the cuisine in Europe. And she finally settled down in New Orleans, where she taught for a year with Teach for America. And then she took a job cooking at the Cochon restaurant in New Orleans. Right now, she's working for Outstanding in the Field, which is an incredible organization that runs events all around the country and the world. And I'm going to let her tell us more about that. Clara, are you with me?
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Doing so well here in Arizona.
You're in Arizona now?
We are currently in Arizona, leaving today for our last leg of the tour in California.
Oh, that's great. So let's start by first telling people what is Outstanding in the Field, because I'm sure there's lots of people that have never even heard of your organization.
Yeah, absolutely. So Outstanding in the Field is basically a roving culinary circus of sorts. We travel around the country to different farms where we basically build a temporary restaurant and put on an event with local notable chefs, and showcase the wonderful food in different areas, bring people to the table, have farmers and local breweries, local wineries there, so that everybody can share a meal together, connect with each other, learn about each other. And then we pack up and go on to the next spot and do the same thing again.
Wow. So when you get to a spot, how does it work? Do you bring everything with you? You bring the tables and chairs, or people locally rent it?
Yeah, so the way it works is that we have 2 traction trailers that we travel around the country with, where we bring all of our own tables and chairs, 2 grills, and a few burners for the cooks to cook on. And we'll arrive at a farm and pick a spot for our long communal table to go. Jim Donovan, our founder, has created this amazing aesthetic of these long, beautiful tables with white tablecloths. It's really a sight to see. And we'll set it all up. We rent our tablecloths and our cutlery and our napkins, but we travel with all of our platters and tables and chairs and pop-ups and things like that. So,
You rent the the linens and the dishware locally, so you don't have to deal with washing.
Actually, we have a really great aspect of Outstanding in the Field, which is that everybody brings their own dish. You know, it's this idea that the breweries bring the beer, and the chef brings the food, and the farmers grow the food, and then everybody brings their own dish from home so that they can eat off of this, you know, personal plate. If you forget your plate, we actually carry some with us so that, you know, everybody has something to eat off of. But yeah, that's another part of it, is we actually don't rent dishware for people. They bring their own to the table.
Wow, that's lovely. We do that at, you know, slow food potlucks that we have. We tell people to bring their own. And then we have, you know, some paper for those that don't. But it's really nice for people to bring that, because it also gets them into the mindset of, you know, recycling and reusing.
Absolutely. And also it makes it a really special event. I mean, even yesterday, people, you know, bring all different kinds of plates. Yesterday we had a couple that had their vows written on their plates. And so they'll bring that, or people who bring, you know, old wedding china, or people who even make outstanding in the field plates, you know, at those paint-your-own-plate stores, and they'll make one to signify the event, which is really awesome. And then it's with them forever, and they get to reuse it, and they get to remember what it was like to sit with us at the table. It's a lot of fun.
Wow. Can you just tell us a little bit of history about Standing in the Field? How did it start? When did it start?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was started, so Jim Donovan, an amazing artist, was the chef at Gabriella Cafe in Santa Cruz, and he worked with all local farmers in the region, and around the mid-90s, he had this idea to basically bring the farmers into the restaurant and have them, you know, tell their story at the restaurant to connect diners with the people who were really growing their food. And I mean, that was really early on. You know, that wasn't something that was happening across the country the way that it is now. And sort of time went on. His brother, Bill Donovan, is an organic farmer, one of the first organic farmers to be certified in 1974. And he decided, hey, we need to bring people back out to the land where this food is being grown. So that started happening very early on. You know, it was mostly like a few paying guests and then sort of Jim's friends filling the rest of the seats at the table, as, you know, startups start in these funny little ways. And then 2000, you know, there were two events. 2002, there were eight events, you know, sort of creeping up. And then finally in 2004 was the first cross-country tour, which was, you know, still only, I don't know, 35 events, but we got really lucky because in 2007 we did CBS Sunday Morning and 10 million people saw Outstanding in the Field, and that just sort of changed everything. And suddenly in 2008 we were doing 57 dinners across the country, and this year we did 87 dinners. In the current tour season, and then we're going to actually be doing eight more over the winter months. We go to Hawaii, and we go to Florida and New Orleans, and we're actually tacking one on in Sayulita, Mexico.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
And how large are these events typically? Like, how many guests usually come?
Yeah, absolutely. So it varies depending on the region, but they get up to almost as large as about 220.
Oh, my God.
That's about as big as we go. And then, you know, we have some smaller events as well, and we have a private events department, so that's, you know, we'll have small dinners with people. But, yeah, they can get pretty big, which is, if you can imagine, a really long table in the middle of a field with this white tablecloth and big family-style dinner, you know, big platter goes down in the middle of the table, everybody's sharing, everybody's literally breaking bread with each other.
So everything's really served family-style?
Yes, everything is served family-style. And, you know, it's a three-course meal, basically, three savory courses, dessert. And when you first arrive, we have past appetizers and usually a local beer or a local wine or a cocktail from the restaurant, you know, really showcasing what a community has to offer. That's one of the great things, I think, about Outstanding in the Field, is we connect with these farmers and chefs who, you know, already have a relationship. They already are speaking to each other on probably an almost daily basis about, you know, what's coming in and what they are ordering, you know, and they help us connect to more local people in that community who are showcasing other things. The other day we were at Blue Heron Farm in Texas, and for dessert, we had, you know, local goat milk popsicles. So it's just it's a really great way for communities to come together and for people from the community or from elsewhere to break bread together.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you said you have a local chef that you hire. For 220 people, you need more than just one chef. So how do you address that? Do they bring the other people that they like to work with?
Yeah, I mean, we actually, for some of those larger dinners, we have one chef that's organizing it, and he brings his whole, you know, team of people to help put on the dinner. It's definitely a lot of work for the chef, but it's so much fun, and we have tons of chefs who we've had long relationships with and come, you know, 6 years in a row have done outstanding in the field events for 200 or so people. For example, Brian Allberg of the Red Lion Inn in the Berkshires.
Yes, I
can. It's his sixth dinner this year.
Nice.
And, you know, he just every year just makes such an amazing showcase of what the Berkshires and that area have to offer in terms of the produce that he uses and, you know, the beer and the local wine.
Uh-huh.
A wonderful experience,
Well, I've gone to your website, and you can see, for everyone out there, you can go to Outstanding in the Field's website and see pictures of these beautiful tables, one after the next after the next. I didn't realize they were that long, that there was, like, 200 people. That's huge.
Not all
but
of
I don't
them,
see any with
them,
a tent over it. So how do you deal with rain? Do you have rain dates, or do you...
Yeah, so because we travel around the country, we sort of have to stick to a very tight schedule. You know, we'll have a dinner one place, and then the next day a dinner, you know, 3 hours away. So it's difficult for us to do rain dates. We rent tents if we think there is going to be a possibility of rain. Or oftentimes we're at these beautiful old farms where there are, you know, large barns, and they've been, you know, cleaned out, and we use them to set the table and string lights, and, you know, we make a different experience that's not out in the middle of the field, but certainly still connecting you to the farm and to, you know, the local food. So we definitely make it work. It's a lot of fun.
Uh-huh. Okay, so
and
it happens rain or shine.
And, you know, it can be raining during reception and you're eating some hors d'oeuvres and drinking some wine under a tent, and then all of a sudden it clears up and, you know, there will be the tour crew taking the table across the field, and we'll take it out of the barn often if it's not raining and move it back into the middle of the field. I have carried many a table across the field.
Uh-huh. And so you travel with your whole group? I mean, all your waiters and waitresses come with you, or that's something that the chef brings?
It's a combination. So there are about five of us that travel constantly and go work every event. And we are, you know, sort of do all jacks.
Good to be with you.
Sometimes we wash dishes. Sometimes we are serving the table. Sometimes we are the expediter or the liaison between the chef and the front of house manager. We sort of work all the positions. And then often for these larger dinners, we'll have the restaurant bring their staff to be a part of the event, and they will act as servers as well. And then in addition, we often have people who aren't tour members, maybe don't want to commit to the full 6 months of traveling. It's definitely a big commitment. And they'll sort of come along for a few months and, you know, work the events with us. They travel independently in their own cars and, you know, find their own places to camp, et cetera. But they'll hang out with us for a little while and be on the road. We call them satellites. And, it's a fun traveling circus of people.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. So does Outstanding in the Field, are you committed to organic and sustainable practices? You only go to farms that are doing that kind of thing, right?
Well, I mean, we go to all different kinds of farms, but we definitely mostly, you know, go to small agriculture that are producing vegetables or vineyards that are, you know, doing small-scale production.
I don't think there's a debate
all on a
between
scale. And we are dedicated to
through biotechnology
and
controlling the seed.
But we really let the farmers tell their story.
Which were earlier just the agrochemical
companies surrounding
and before that were the war
about organic and
with the communities
really
and the large majority of the world practicing and promoting
what they
ecological agriculture.
Yes, we do along the laws.
So when you're calling you put on an event like this, cycle of the hydrological cycle, of the nitrogen cycle, of the carbon cycle.
Get up in
now
front
these
of the
laws,
group and talk
they can only
in, like
be
a,
violated
in a presentation
broken,
type of thing, or is it more just in the mingling
the breaking
part
of the carbon cycle
people?
Is climate change.
Yeah,
the breaking
absolutely.
Of the nitrogen cycle
at the beginning,
are the
we have perception,
zones
like
in the
I said
ocean.
Before, and then
the breaking
the farmer
of the
gets up
hydrological
and
cycle.
And then actually everybody goes on a farm tour. And they get to see sort of what the farm is doing, and different people from the farm and the farmer will take, you know, smaller groups around so you can really hear and get engaged and ask questions and see what they're growing or what kind of livestock they're raising at that time. And then the farmer will also sit down at the table and eat with everybody. And oftentimes there will be, you know, it's not just one farmer that's contributing to the meal, and we'll have the other farmers, if they're able to make it, also come and sit down at the table and enjoy the meal with everybody. And then at times they'll get up and walk around and talk to people about what they do. And it's a really joyous experience of connecting with the farmer. But we definitely make a point to showcase what they do and have them speak and really make them the center of the experience, because that's what it's about. It's about celebrating what they do.
Right. Sounds great. We're going to take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I want you to, you know, maybe share some of your favorite stories or your favorite events that you've gone on this year with our listeners, okay? Everyone,
absolutely.
Don't go anywhere.
Thanks.
I'm talking with Clara Lyle from Outstanding in the Field. Be right back.
This is Karen Hartglass, host of It's All About Food, and you're listening to PRN, your source for progressive, up-to-date, and inspirational information on nutrition and health.
Why would anyone ride on top of an elevator, lug around an 11-pound large print dictionary, or compete in a swim race unable to see the course? Well, this is me, and I've got some riveting experiences to share with you. Hey, I'm Mark Farrell. Join me for Insight, a new show coming to PRN.FM. It's about overcoming adversity, and who doesn't experience this in some capacity? I'm no doctor, but I'm an expert in me since I've been dealing with various forms of adverse conditions all my life, like having a rare visual disability that challenges much of what I do. Insight, real-life issues, including mental health, anxiety, depression, suicide, drugs, and alcohol. Celebrity guests will also reveal on Insight how they overcame adversity to make it, as well as your calls on challenges you struggle with. My difference makes me stronger. That's my mantra. Listen and discover how your difference makes you stronger. Insight, Thursdays at 11 a.m. only on PRN.FM.
Gary Null's incisive documentary and informational films on today's most crucial issues have won dozens of international awards. As a free service to listeners, acclaimed films such as War on Health and Seeds of Death are available to watch in their entirety online. Just go to YouTube and search for Gary Null. Thank you for your continued support.
This is PRN, the comprehensive news source for the world's progressive community. We're moving forward. Hope you're coming with us.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm here with Clara Lyle, the photographer and event coordinator for Outstanding in the Field, which is a wonderful organization that travels the country and the world creating beautiful outdoor farm events. Clara, are you with me again?
I am. Hi.
Hi. Great. So I wanted to ask you to share some of your favorite stories. You've been working with the organization now since May, is that right?
Yeah, I'm actually not the events coordinator. I do all of their social media, and I tour with them, and we are all pretty much all jacks of all trades. You know, we do everything related to the organization, but we have wonderful event planner in New York and California that help us put it all together because it really is so much work. So Anna and Laura are just fantastic and help us get all of our work done. But, yeah, we've been traveling for the past 5 months. I haven't been back to New Orleans for 5 months. So we start out in California, and then we head north to Oregon and Washington. And actually we do two events in Canada, and then we travel back east, you know, in the northern part of North America, and then we travel down the East Coast and back across the South. So we're at our very last leg right now.
And then you go back to Florida, and where else in the South do you do in the winter?
So, yeah, so we take a teeny break for the, you know, for the holiday season, and everybody goes home to their family. And then we have our core crew of event planners and coordinators who go to Hawaii, which is really amazing. And we do events in Oahu and Maui. And then we have our events in Florida, and an event in New Orleans, which I'm really excited about because it's near mine.
Uh-huh.
And then we're going to Mexico this year, which will be really cool.
Now, Mexico you can still drive to, but going to Hawaii, how will you work that out? You obviously can't drive your bus there.
No,
so what do you do?
We cannot drive our bus there. We fly. Yeah,
uh-huh.
We fly.
So you have to rent everything locally?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, we have to rent everything locally. We bring some things with us, but, you know, you can't fly it all. It's too heavy.
right, absolutely. And where in Hawaii are you going this year?
We are going to Oahu and Maui. And
uh-huh.
We're going to be also going to the Big Island. So we're going to Big Island Abalone, we're going to the Maui Tropical Plantation, and we're going to Kualoa Ranch. Are the three different locations.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be beautiful.
And I know typically
your events
sell out, right? They sell out way in advance even. I've already looked at, I know you're going to Florida, and my in-laws were going to be down in that area, so I went and looked, and I think you're already like half sold out.
Yeah, you know, some events sell out more quickly than other events, so it's definitely always worth going and checking. Yeah, we have a pretty amazing following of people. You know, it's been around for quite a few years now, and so we have people who are coming to, you know, their 6th, 7th, 8th, 15th dinner, and they know when our tickets are going on sale, and they hop on the Internet and make
right.
sure to be a part of it because they have such a good time. And, you know, everybody gets to meet new people, and you sit next to someone you haven't talked to before, and although it's this really large, long table, you know, you're having a really intimate experience with the 4, 5, 6 people around you. It's only tables of 8, so if you can imagine it sort of sitting down at a dining room table and breaking bread with people next to you. But, yeah.
Right. And do you ever do just vegetarian or vegan events, or is there always meat involved, and how do you handle somebody with special dietary needs?
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually kind of my job because I'm the expediter. So we accommodate all kinds of dietary restrictions. We just prefer, you know, to be told ahead of time. So if you buy your tickets and you have a dietary restriction, just shoot us an email and let us know. And then we accommodate whatever you need, and that way we can tell the chef beforehand and he can prepare or she can prepare. Mm-hmm. However, we do about one event a year that is a vegetarian event. This year it was with Lacey Shearer from Inquenso, Oakland, and it was a fantastic event at Knoll Farms, which is really old biodynamic farm outside of San Francisco. Very cool people. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And is it the chef that requests wanting to do the vegetarian event, or do you want to do a vegetarian event and then find a chef?
So we try and do a different, you know, a vegetarian event every year. And Lacey happens to be just a fantastic vegetarian vegan chef. And so we try and find somebody who, you know, really makes that their passion, and that way we can show people, you know, all the different kinds of food that can be vegetarian and also be absolutely wonderful and delicious. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So can you share with us?
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I would say, you know, we really make a point to showcase produce. So there is meat and there is fish in the dishes, but, you know, we're really highlighting vegetables. That's a big part of what we do. We're highlighting, you know, the local pig that is heritage breed that's only been fed, you know, the remaining vegetables from the farm and Parmesan rinds or something. It's all, you know, even the meat that we serve is really ethically raised and sustainably fed. And, yeah, it's really cool to see the different processes of how these animals are being raised and people really doing it right.
Mm-hmm. Can you share with us a story from your favorite event this year?
Ooh, I don't know if there's a favorite event because a lot of them are so different. But I would say one of my most magical evenings was really early on tour, you know, and you've left your home and you're with this group of people you're about to travel with for 5 months. So it's a really interesting sort of dynamic because you're all getting to know each other very quickly. And we were doing our first events around California, and we went to a farm called Casitas Valley Farm outside of Santa Barbara. And the farmers are Jesse and Anna. And they do sort of small-scale agriculture and also raise hogs. We just had this beautiful event, and everyone had such a good time. And you can feel it sometimes in the air when everyone is really connecting, and the food was fantastic. Melissa made great food. And at the end of the meal, everybody is getting ready to leave, and the pigs had gotten out. And there was Anna with a baby on her hip trying to corral the pigs back into the pen that they had. And it was just this hysterical scene of guests leaving and all, you know, 5 to 10 pigs just roaming around the table and, you know, knocking into things and trying to corral them back. And you're having this moment with the farmer where you're just sort of getting a little piece of their life. And it was just such perfect timing, too, for people to see, you know, this beautiful farm and everything's going so smoothly. And then suddenly you get a major dose of reality of, you know, what it is like to really raise livestock and be managing all of these different things at once. It's a lot of work and takes a lot of patience and control. So I'd say that was a very funny moment. Another one would be Duxbury. Island Creek Oysters is a place that we go every year. That's one of the ones where you have to hop on the computer, you know, as quick as you can to get tickets to, because it just sells out really quick. And we set that table on the beach such that the tide comes up. And there are points where the table looks like it's set on water because the tide is covering the bottom of the table. And that's really just an amazing sight.
I think I saw that on the website. Is there a picture of that?
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, it's beautiful. yeah, so I guess everybody has to take their shoes off.
Yeah.
Or
we
be wearing.
We try and plan it so that the tide is out when they're sitting, you know, so it's not like they're not sitting in water. But there have been a few times where that hasn't quite fully worked out. So.
Yes, when you're working with nature, you have to be flexible.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the cool things. I've learned so much about how, you know, weather patterns work. Jim is like a total weather nut. As you can imagine, you know, here is this, you know, beautiful dinner that he puts on, and he's totally at the mercy of Mother Nature. And so he's just really become super astute in being able to recognize weather patterns, and he follows the radar. And I just learned so much from him about how that all works, which has really been super fun.
Does he still travel with the company?
Oh, yeah. He travels with us. I mean, he, like everybody, takes a little break, but he pretty much travels with us for the full 6 months, which is really great. He's at, you know, every dinner talking to guests. He does opening remarks. You know, he loves it. It's his baby.
That's amazing. Yeah, because very often people start something like this, and then, you know, they either burn out or move on and pass the buck, but it never quite is quite the same once the person whose baby it was leaves, you know. So that's really nice that he's still involved.
Yeah, he's very involved, and I agree. I think it's really great, and it makes it what it is. But he is so involved in the aesthetic and making sure that everything runs smoothly, and you know, really speaking with the farmers. It's a great thing to see. Mm-hmm. I hope it goes on for a long time, as long as he can keep traveling.
Can you share with us? I know you touched on that there's a 3-course savory meal, but can you touch on a little bit more some of the foods that you've seen served over the course of time that you've been traveling with them?
Oh yeah, this is my favorite.
Good
part of it.
Mine too.
is the food. I mean, you know, coming on a tour like this, you get to really see what's going on in terms of the season, with what food is being grown, and then you're also looking at what chefs are doing with it. So it's just a really interesting sort of survey of what American chefs are doing with food at this exact moment in time. And, you know, for example, we're starting out and you watch as tomatoes come into season, and all of a sudden every single dinner, you know, as it should, has beautiful heirloom tomatoes, and chefs are doing all different kinds of things with it. They're mixing it with wheat berries, or they're mixing it with mozzarella, you know, very traditional, or they're serving it completely on its own with, you know, drizzles of olive oil and just some rock salt. And then we move on, you know, to different squashes, and you see all the summer squash come out, and then you see the winter squash come out. So we've had this great showcase of what's going on seasonally. One of my favorite things to see on tour, Tony Maz of Craigie on Main did it at our Allendale farm dinner, and we have, you know, chefs do it periodically throughout tour, but they basically make a salad of just everything available that day from the farm. So they'll say to the farmer, you know, just any greens that you have available, you know, whatever is in season at this moment, I'll make a dressing and we'll put it all together. And it just becomes this, you know, example of what is being grown that day, what the freshest food is from that farm in that moment. And it's such a special thing for the farmer, because that entire dish is just really about them. And yeah, it's a really fun thing to see. We do a lot of pig roasts as well. The past 2 dinners here at Agritopia, the Mangalista pigs are, I'm looking at them right now, actually, not very far from me. And Farmer Eric raised the pigs for our event this year. And both chefs did them in different ways. One of them cooked the whole hog, and then the other, you know, deboned it and wrapped it with rosemary and salt and a bunch of different herbs, and cooked it, smoked it for a little while, and then cooked it again. But yeah, we do all different kinds of things, and chefs come up with this amazingly creative ways to make food, especially when, you know, you're working outside. We have 2 grills, and we have 4 pretty strong burners, but for cooking for 200 people, you have to get pretty creative in the way that you're executing. So it's great to see them push their boundaries and really turn out amazing food.
Yeah. This summer, at the end of the summer, I went out to Burning Man and I cooked for a camp of 40 people every day for 8 days. And, you know, I was working just on 2 little burners, and I had a little, like, toaster oven, you know, camping stove that was, like, tiny, tiny. And it was really quite an event, you know, figuring out what could be made well on little burners like that. Actually, they were big propane burners, but still, I was only cooking for 40, so I can only imagine cooking on burners like that for 200.
Was there anything that you made that you can remember was just like, oh, yes, this is an easy way to make something great and simply on 2 small propane burners?
Well, I did a curry day. I did some, you know, vegetable curry. You know, things with sauces really hold well. I couldn't bring a thermal catering caddy, but I could bring a thermal bag. And I brought that so that I could make batches and then keep it warm while I made another batch, because, I couldn't make enough at one time. And I needed to be able to keep it warm. So I would make batches of it.
You get creative.
Right, right. And, of course, stir fries were great. One day I made lasagna, and I had to cook them in half-size pans in that little camping oven. So I had to, like, start, like, 5 hours ahead of time, and each one take out and put in the thermal bag and do another round. And, you know, I could get two half little pans at a time. That I don't know that I'd recommend doing that again.
but it's so much fun. I mean, and that's the thing, the chefs come out. And it's pretty clear sometimes that, you know, they've been up till 4 in the morning. Or, for example, you know, we'll have chefs, unfortunately, you know, it's not anything I'd wish upon them, but they, you know, they've cut themselves or they've had some sort of injury in the preparation of the event, which is, you know, a normal thing that happens in a kitchen. Mm-hmm. But since we don't postpone or, you know, have rain days or injury days.
Of course,
you know,
the show has to go on.
The show goes on. And so it's really just a fun thing for them because it's just one of those days that you push really hard and you started, like you said, you know, 5 in the morning making food. And, I think the intensity of it brings everybody together, which is fun.
Now, in your travel, have you come across anything that, you know, seasonally in a certain location that's really special to just that location that you didn't see anywhere else? Like, I know, you know, in this one part of, like, I think it's Atlanta, Georgia, these special, you know, their heritage watermelons, you know, that have the special rind for pickling water, you know, watermelon rind. You know, anything like that that's just really special and typical for one certain area?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I think seeing... is not necessarily always that it can't grow in other places. It's that it just culturally belongs to one place. You know, for example, okra. Suddenly having all this beautiful okra on the menu and knowing that it really can grow in quite a few places, but it's just such a deep part of the South. And it's something that you see in so much amazing Southern cuisine, and you just... all of a sudden, you cross a few state borders, and there's the okra and the stew. And
right,
that's,
right.
You know, another great thing is, like, learning about all of these different cultures and the food culture that goes along with it. You know, being sort of up near Boston or in the New England area and just so much beautiful shellfish, you know, and
right,
clams.
Right.
And it's just... there's still so much of it where it's not necessarily that you can't get it anywhere else, but it's just what they eat, and that's still so real. This is a very big country, you know, and that's been a great thing to be exposed to, and I'm really excited that I've had this opportunity to do this. So, yeah.
Right. So that's exactly what I mean, you know, the okra for the Deep South, shellfish for New England, it just makes sense, you know. Being a slow food person, I've gone out to Italy, to the international slow food conferences. And,
right.
You know, there will be indigenous people from different, you know, tribes that grow, you know, some special grain or corn or whatever that's just different. It's a different variety. You know, we all think of corn just being one variety or nuts being just one variety. And there's really, you know, a variety within them, a lot of diversity that we are not really privy to if we're shopping at a regular supermarket.
Especially in the United States. And I think that's really something that's so great that's starting to come out of this movement our food renaissance or whatever you want to refer to it as, is this diversity of varietals and people becoming, you know, familiar with the lemon cucumber. And even though it sort of looks like a squash maybe a little bit, and it's confusing because it doesn't look like a normal cucumber, but all of a sudden you see it at the farmer's market and you know what it is and you learn to cook with it and you start to realize just the amazing biodiversity that we have on this planet that for a little while disappeared from some of what we were cooking, and now, you know, in America is really coming back.
Right, right. It's really... you know, I get that from Outstanding in the Field, really celebrating food and local traditions. And, you know, it's very connected to the slow food movement. I don't know how familiar you are with the slow food movement, but...
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, it's really a celebratory event to celebrate and introduce and awaken the senses of local and sustainable and heirloom diversity, yeah. great.
Yeah, it's definitely connected to the slow food movement. I mean, it's this idea of really connecting to your community, connecting to your farmer. Slow down, you know, break bread with them. Let's eat together. Let's talk about, you know, what we have on our plates and where it came from and why, what it grows in and what kind of soil and nurturing the soil makes a really big difference in how something grows and, you know, educating people. It's about educating people and allowing them time to digest their food and speak to each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you have a great job, my dear.
I'm really, really lucky.
So you wanted to share with everyone how they would find Outstanding in the Field, and because we're almost out of time.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go onto our website, outstandinginthefield.com, you can look at all of the events that we have coming up. We have 8 more events left in California, and then we have our winter tour, which is going to be in January and February. We'll be in Hawaii, we'll be in Florida, we'll be in New Orleans. We even have an event in Mexico. And if you can't make it this time around, our tickets for next year go online, on sale in March. So definitely keep your eyes out, and please come join us at the table. We would love to meet you. We'd love to see you. We'd love to break bread with you. So.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Clara, for joining us today. It's been really wonderful to learn about your organization.
Yeah, we hope to see you at the table. Anytime you want to come, let us know.
Okay, sounds great. And everybody out there listening, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. I'll be with you again next week. Bye for now.